Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 142 event, which takes place in Adelaide, Australia. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley won one unit for UFC Fight Night 141 with his one-unit free bet on Rashad Coulter at minus 129 odds. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 142 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Alex Gorgis, who is 7-0, and Demir Ismagulov, who is 16-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Ismagulov opened minus 405, the comeback on Gorgis at plus 285, and right now our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu. Right now, currently at DSI, it is Ismagulov at minus 462, the comeback on Gorgis is at plus 352. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, more money coming in on Ismagulov. Of course, out of these two fighters, Ismagulov is definitely the more accomplished fighter. He's a solid lightweight prospect. He's the former M1 global lightweight champion. So he's got a lot of solid experience outside of the UFC, making his UFC official debut here this weekend, of course. And Gorgis, on the other hand, as far as his pre-UFC level of competition, it's fairly weak. He's undefeated at 7-0, and obviously he's got a lot of finishes in those wins, but that being said, against really bad competition. Now, as far as stylistic matchup goes, Gorgis is a long fighter for the lightweight division. He does have some power in the feet. He's aggressive. He comes throwing bombs, but he's a little sloppy and wild at times as well. So what you're going to see here is a more raw, fighter that definitely brings in and has a lot of, confidence in his game, but he has a lot of flaws and holes in his game as well, where Ismagulov, on the other hand, is a lot more, like I said, accomplished. He's a lot more technical. He's a lot more well-rounded, and he has less flaws in his game and less holes. So that's why you're seeing such a huge odds discrepancy here. And I think it's right, honestly. Ismagulov, I mean, the only way, in my opinion, that Gorgis can win this fight is if he lands a crazy big bomb haymaker on the feet. And it's, I don't want to say it's going to be a lucky type of punch, but I mean, more times than not, Ismagulov probably defends, gets top position on the ground, and is able to possibly finish it on the ground. If not, he doesn't have to finish it on the ground either. I think he's more than capable of picking Gorgis apart on the feet with technical skill and more accuracy and, again, more technique. So Ismagulov is definitely the better fighter here, and I think he is going to prove that by probably finishing Gorgis and making that zero disappear on his resume. So Ismagulov is a side. I think he does come through here. As far as a bet goes, both of these guys are coming in on short notice. I would probably stay away because I don't see value either way. So pick is Ismagulov.
Yeah, I'm definitely impressed with Ismagulov. I mean, this is a guy that's entering the UFC on an 11-fight win streak. He was the M1 lightweight champion, and he defended the belt three times. Just a really solid, well-rounded fighter. Now, Gorgis is talented. He's got some power, as we mentioned, but very raw. I think that he is a little wild. He leaves a lot of openings. I think, as Nick mentioned, Ismagulov can hold his own and potentially outwork him on the feet, but the biggest advantage should be on the ground because Gorgis has a 4-inch height disparity here. I mean, he's 6'2", which is pretty massive for the lightweight division. So if Gorgis can land something really crazy, then I think that he has a chance. But other than that, Ismagulov should be able to outwork him on the feet. He should be able to get him to the floor, and then he should be able to either hold him down on the canvas and either ride out a decision, maybe get a TKO from ground and pound, maybe get a submission. There's just way more paths to victory for Ismagulov, where for Gorgis, I think really the only thing is winning by knockout, because I don't think he can outpoint Izmagulov either on the feet. Izmagulov has just faced way better competition throughout his career. That gym that Gorgis comes from kind of has a reputation for, you know, beating up on really, really low tier fighters that don't have a lot of experience to pad their record a little bit. And I think this time, you know, facing somebody real, I think he's in for a big wake up call. So my pick is definitely going to be Izmagulov. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have Mizuto Hirota, who is 18-9-2, taking on Christos Giagos, who is 15-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Giagos opened -365, the comeback on Hirota at +255, and right now looking over at BetDSI, it's currently Giagos still a solid favorite, -355, the comeback on Hirota is at +275. And Giagos finally getting a winnable fight for him. I mean, or I want to say no disrespect to Hirota, because Hirota, in my opinion, has been a very solid fighter throughout his whole career in Japan and finally making it over to the UFC, well-deserved. And, you know, you got to take your hat off to him because he's fought a lot of high-level competition, and the guy definitely has some skill. And he's made himself to the point where he's more than just a striker. He's a pretty well-rounded fighter, but of course it's highlighted by his striking skill. But this matchup for him is kind of bad. Giagos, in most cases, has been fighting a higher-level competition and just stylistically bad matchups for him. But with this one here, Hirota's going to look to strike. He might look to wrestle a little bit as well, but I think Giagos can stuff the takedowns that Hirota brings here, and I think Giagos actually is going to be the more effective striker on the feet, and I think he's going to be a little bit more dangerous. Now, of course, Hirota's being age 37. He is getting up there in MMA years. He's even beyond that as well. I know he's a tough veteran. He's hard to finish. He comes to fight every time, but I think this is actually a really good spot for Giagos, because I do think he could beat Hirota on the feet. I think he's the more capable ground fighter here in this situation as well. And I think he could basically dictate and control the pace of this fight. So winnable fight for Giagos. You're seeing him as a solid favorite for a reason. I mean, outside of his losses in the UFC, Giagos is definitely better than what he showed and displayed. He's the type of guy that gets better, and he's going to continue to get better as well. And once he gets a little bit more confidence under his belt, I think with the W here, I think that he can go on a little run if matched properly. But again, this is a good fight for him, and I think he gets it done here. Now, it is kind of tough, though, where the current odds are right now to lay down 3.5-1 or so over Hirota, because Giagos still has those times where, you know, maybe Fight IQ lets him down, or, you know, he could possibly make a mistake or two and get him beat. So there's no question that Hirota's going to show up, and he's going to be game, and he's not going to be an easy out. But again, styles make fights, and I think Giagos here has a path to victory in many ways, and I think he gets it done. So tough to bet, but I would pick Giagos here and look for him to maybe even get a finish here, surprisingly. But if not, I think he wins on the scorecards at least. So the pick is Giagos.
Yeah, this is an intriguing matchup of, you know, experience, technical know-how against youth and athleticism and quickness and probably a little bit of power. I think Giagos probably at this point is potentially the more powerful striker of the two. Giagos definitely will be moving quicker. I mean, he's significantly younger than Mizuto Hirota. He's taken a lot less damage throughout the course of his career. Hirota, so far in his UFC run, I believe has gone 0-2-1, with the one draw being against Ishihara. You know, it's just been a difficult run for him, and now he's moving back to the lightweight division after a little bit of a run at featherweight. And yeah, I just don't think it's going to go well for him here. You know, Giagos is going to be a lot bigger than him. I think he's got four and a half inches in reach on Hirota. And even though Hirota does have that technical ability and he has added some wrestling to his game over the years, I just think that Giagos is just going to be a little bit too athletic and too big and too strong for him at this point in his career. You know, Giagos isn't a world beater by any means, but, I think that, as Nick mentioned, he's had some really tough matchups so far throughout the course of his career, both in his first UFC run and then in his return to the Octagon as well. You know, he's also a guy that, you know, obviously earned his way back to the Octagon with some quality victories and has, I think at this point, is definitely way better, than he was when he first debuted in the UFC. maybe the original run of Yagos Hirota could beat. But I think this time around, Yagos should get the better of him. I just think he's going to be too physical, and I just don't think Hirota will be able to keep up and basically trade strength for strength with him over the course of three rounds. And I think Yagos gets it done. I'm not convinced that he's going to dominate this fight. So with the odds the way they are, I mean, it might even be worth a flyer on Hirota by like a split decision type of thing. But overall, though, picking this fight, I have to say that Yagos wins it more often than not. But I do think the odds are a little bit out of control here. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division for the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have Kai Kara France, who is 17-7, taking on late-notice replacement Elias Garcia, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Cara France opened -365, Garcia +255. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually Cara France at -347. The comeback on Garcia is +277. So line margins have tightened up, line holding steady. Cara France, solid favorite over Garcia. Garcia stepping in on short notice. And you know what? I think this is actually potentially a pretty good fight, maybe better than people think it's going to be. I know Cara France is the more hyped fighter, the more respected fighter in this spot. I mean, he's a former tough 24 veteran, and he lost to Pantoja on the show in a very close decision, actually. And he looked pretty good on that series or TV show of Tough 24, I should say, overall. So he's definitely a quality fighter that should be on the UFC roster here. So I'm glad they brought him in. That said, though, I think Garcia, I know he lost to De La Rosa in his UFC debut, and you know, maybe it wasn't his best performance for sure, because it was a pretty competitive fight, but De La Rosa definitely was winning that fight, and then he ended up getting a submission win over Garcia. But I think Garcia is better than what he showed there. I think even on the feet here, a lot of people are expecting Garcia's only path to victory being on the ground against a guy like Cara France. But I think even on the feet, Garcia is long. He's capable of doing some good things. He throws well-timed kicks, of course, like the Pettis, you know, his cousins or whatnot, the Pettis family. I mean, he does have that technique and that capability of pulling off some really nice strikes. He's got some punching power on the feet as well. So I wouldn't necessarily count him out completely. I think he's going to be a little bit more comfortable here. He's going to have a little chip on his shoulder, and he's going to want to prove that he does belong on the UFC roster, and he's going to come to fight. So even though Cara France definitely has an advantage in the striking realm, and I think he is a little bit faster, and I think he is going to land the cleaner shots throughout and probably outpoint Garcia on the feet, I think it will be competitive there. And I'm saying that because Garcia probably will look to take this fight to the ground. That's where he has the biggest advantage in this fight over Cara France. I think Garcia's submission skill is definitely a lot better. If he even look in the De La Rosa fight, at times he showed capabilities of having an unorthodox guard. I mean, going for those triangle chokes or whatnot. I mean, De La Rosa had a spin out of it, and kind of get himself out of trouble at times, and a very unorthodox submission defense from De La Rosa at times. But you could just see glimpses of how dangerous Garcia can be even on the ground. So Garcia's best path to victory is definitely taking this fight to the ground and trying to submit Cara France. But even on the feet, I think he will be game. But again, the question mark here is, can he go strong for three rounds before he gets beat up and picked apart by Cara France? And I mean, that's a big question mark here, because he is taking this fight on short notice as well. So I'm expecting Garcia to perform better than most people think here, but I still think Cara France is going to come away with a win here. And I like what I see from both these guys. I hope they do stay on the roster somehow. I know they're getting rid of the flyweight division, and there's a lot of back and forth about if this fight's at flyweight, if this fight's at bantamweight. Both of these guys really prefer to fight at flyweight. So in a way, it doesn't matter all that much in this matchup exactly. So I do think that, again, both these guys have some good traits about them, and I think they can make for exciting fights even on in the bantamweight division as well. So we'll see where they go from here. But Cara France is my pick, and it should be an exciting fight. I think it has a lot of potential to be a lot better than most people think. So the pick is Cara France.
Yeah, and I should add a disclaimer that I said at the beginning that this was 135 pounds, and we've seen some contradicting reports at 135 and 125 for this fight. Mainly because I think it was originally announced as Cara France against Ashton Mokhtarian, and that was definitely going to be a flyweight fight. And maybe with Garcia stepping in on a week's notice, it might be 135. So we're not quite sure yet this early in the fight week. It should be confirmed like later in the week. But either way, both of these guys are flyweights, So I don't think it'll make too much of a difference what weight class that this fight actually takes place in. Neither guy is like, would be moving up to take on a bigger opponent. But overall, Cara France, I was pretty impressed with him. I thought on Tough 24, he had a really nasty knockout against Terrence Mitchell. Eventually he did lose to, a superior ground fighter, which is a concern for sure. Because, Elias Garcia does have a pretty good ground game. And if Garcia can get the fight to the floor, that's definitely his path to victory, because Cara France is a fantastic striker. I mean, this guy has, just really mixes it up well with his kicking game and his hands. He has, I believe, 7 knockouts overall out of his, career victories, including, I think at one point he did knock out 5 in a row. This is a guy that, can really, put a hurting on people in extended stand-up exchanges. So basically, the longer Elias Garcia, stays standing in this fight, the worse it'll go for him. Nick mentioned that Elias Garcia, training out of Rufus Sport, he's going to have some unorthodox attacks and everything. But I mean, unless he just absolutely obliterates France with like some crazy kick out of nowhere, I think France should just be picking him apart for the most part. Especially with the short notice, the window for Garcia to win this fight is probably the first round. And if he does not get this fight to the floor and tap France out, I think France, eventually is just stuffing takedowns, and then getting it back into striking range and going to work. And I just think, France is going to be too much for him. This is a guy that, really, really has impressed me overall. I think that he has a great striking acumen, and it's going to shine in this fight. And I expect France to get the job done probably by TKO before the end of the third round. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Keita Nakamura, who is 33-9-2, taking on Salom Tewari, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Nakamura open -195, Tewari +155, and right now looking over at BetDSI, it is currently with Nakamura still coming in as a solid favorite at -190, the comeback +160 on Tewari. So line margins have tightened up and line staying pretty much the same as the opener here. And I think it's a decent spot, maybe a little high for Nakamura. And I'm saying that I know there's not going to be a lot of respect on Tewari out there. I mean, he made his debut against Alves, and at times he looked like, maybe he could put his foot on the gas a little bit more, or he could be a little bit more active with the striking. But I think he actually performed relatively well considering it was a short notice fight. And Alves is not exactly an easy guy to get in there with. Tewari is a very big welterweight. I mean, he's physically strong for the weight division. He does have to cut a decent amount of weight to get there as well. And he does have some power. Now, Nakamura is not exactly a small welterweight either. So he's a strong fighter. Nakamura, of course, his best attribute is getting the fight to the ground, grinding people out. He's got a really nice submission game, but his stand-up has gotten a lot better, and he could be effective with it. I mean, sneaky good at times. You don't expect him to, kind of batter you up on the feet, and he does that. I mean, he could be effective, and especially with that left hand. He's got a really nice straight left hand that he throws with some speed and accuracy and really good timing. By far his best weapon on the feet. But the problem is he throws that more than anything else to the point where I think it's predictable at times. And that's the main weapon that Tewari has to look out for, is that straight left hand. I think if Tewari can avoid that, he's going to have a lot of success in this fight with his striking ability here. And of course, the other really good attribute of Nakamura is the single leg takedowns. He goes for those takedowns, and he does have a lot of success doing so. So Tewari needs to keep this fight up on the feet. If Nakamura gets him down, obviously Nakamura has a big advantage there. But I think Tewari is the type of fighter that even if he lets a takedown happen, he will get back to his feet as quick as possible, and he just scrambles up pretty decent, and he does have decent ground awareness. So I'm not expecting this fight to take place on the ground all that much, and I think Tewari on the feet is actually going to be the more heavy-handed striker that's pushing forward and doing a little bit more damage. And I think his confidence level as the fight goes on is going to probably get better and better. So I do like Tewari to pull off the slight upset here against Nakamura. I think that, again, people are probably counting him out a little bit too much. Nakamura is a very game fighter, but I think this is a good stylistic matchup for Tewari. If he can avoid a lot of time on his back, of course. That's the main key here. I think Nakamura could obviously have a lot of success if he can get him down, but I think Tuhari will be hard to hold down, as I mentioned. I think he will have more success on the feet. So Tuhari, I think, is going to impress. He's going to possibly even finish. Nakamura is a hard guy to finish, but I think in a 3-round fight with Tuhari throwing heavy shots, and we're seeing Nakamura get clipped more often in fights as well, eventually that chin is going to start to – it's been tough throughout his career. He's only been officially knocked out once, but we have seen him dropped in the past as well. So I think eventually that chin is going to start to really show a sign of deterioration, and he's going to start getting knocked out more often than not. So – in this spot, I could see that possibly happening here as well. So the pick is Tuhari, possibly by finish here. But if not, I think it's going to be a competitive decision that he actually outstrikes Nakamura and gets the W that way as well. So the pick is Tuhari, and if you're going to bet this fight, there probably is a little bit of value there as well.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Obviously, Nakamura is not a world beater on the feet, but he gets the job done more often than not. And he's actually surprised some people a little bit at times with his stand-up. Now, I don't think that he should be in a full-on 15-minute stand-up brawl with Tuhari. I think that would be a huge mistake. But I think during stand-up exchanges that he can survive there long enough to set up opportunities to get the fight to the floor. Tuhari is not a guy that's going to be looking to get this fight to the canvas. You know, his ground game is not his specialty. He's more striking-based with look to knock people out. And while Nakamura definitely, could get hurt in this fight in a pure stand-up exchange, it's an MMA fight, and Nakamura can get this fight to the floor, and he has a spectacular ground game. Basically what this is going to boil down to is, will Nakamura be able to get this fight to the floor? And I think he can. He's had some impressive submissions in the past, most notably the Yi Xing Long, a fight that, you know, he was in big trouble in at one point, and then, you know, just took Xing Long's back and kind of sunk in a choke and got the, I can't remember if he choked him unconscious or got the tap, but I mean, it was impressive. And Nakamura definitely has that ability to, be sneaky enough on the feet to land a couple shots and set up opportunities to get the fight to the floor. I'm not going to sleep on Nakamura's stand up here either. But Tuhari should overall be the better striker. It's just, will Tuhari be able to keep this fight in the stand up for 3 straight rounds? And I just don't think he can. Especially with Nakamura fighting a little closer to his backyard, Australia, Japan, basically nearly the same time zones, Tuhari traveling all the way from Poland. I think that this is a decent matchup here for Nakamura to show off the well-roundedness of his game. It's just, will he get the fight to the floor? I mean, he averages, a little over 2 takedown attempts takedowns per fight. So I think that he does. And when he does, I think Tuhari will be exposed a little bit on the ground. Tuhari did get taken down in his UFC debut by Warley Alves, not consistently, repeatedly. Warley also, outstruck him on the feet too, which I think also is a good sign for Nakamura. I just think that, Nakamura's experience is going to shine through here, and I think that he does get the fight to the floor. And while I'm not convinced he'll get a submission, I do think that he can get the fight to the floor long enough to win a decision at least. So my pick is going to be Nakamura. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Wilson Hayes, who is 22-9, taking on Ben Wen, who is 17-7. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Hayes opens -150, the comeback on Wen at +110, and right now over at BetDSI, it's actually -135 for Wen, and the comeback on Hayes is at +105. So line flip, more action coming in Wen's way. And I do agree with it. I think that Wen is going to be a tough matchup for Hayes. Although if you look back at Formiga versus Wen and Wen's last fight, Formiga had a lot of success actually getting Wen to the ground, tripping him down and controlling that fight a little bit on the ground, more so than Wen fans would like to see. And then, of course, laying that beautiful spinning back fist, and it led to the submission win for Formiga over Wen. So, I mean, Hayes, looking at that, he could see a path to victory. I mean, you grab that leg, take him down when Wen's trying to kick, follow the same blueprint, get on his back, try to possibly submit Wen in that route. And of course, we've seen Wen have some beautiful scrambles throughout his fights. I mean, Wen is a very well-rounded fighter. I mean, he has some fun, like I said, really good ground, offensive skill, especially defensively. He definitely is flawed a little bit against the superior ground fighters like Hayes or like a Formiga, of course, or even like Smolkov. Smolkov was able to beat him on the ground. But at the same time, again, he shows signs of, really good ground in his own right offensively. Look at the Tim Elliott fight, for example. And then on the feet, Wen definitely has a huge advantage over Hayes. I mean, Wen is an aggressive striker. Defensively is what I'm concerned about with Wen. Even though Hayes doesn't have a lot of knockout power, he's getting a little bit more comfortable and a little bit more confident in striking. And, you know, he does have a little bit of power. I don't think Hayes is going to do damage here. So I think Wen is going to be okay in that regard. I don't think he gets clipped by a punch. In this spot, I think actually, if anybody, it's going to be Hayes that's in trouble if this stays on the feet too long. So Hayes definitely needs to get this fight to the ground and try to exploit Wen's weakness. I just don't think he's going to be able to do it. I don't think he's going to be able to duplicate, Formiga's game plan and have that success that, Formiga did against Wen. And of course, Wen, he has to change up his game plan a little bit. He knows, hey, if I threw some kicks and it led to a takedown, I have to kind of be smart about that and maybe throw less kicks and just outstrike, Hayes in a different manner. And I think he's smart enough to realize that. So we'll see. I mean, fight IQ sometimes with all these fighters, if you guys have been betting fights for a while, you know, it's frustrating at times because these guys, you know, will make mistakes in the cage that you don't want to see. But I think overall, if Wen is smart, he could keep this fight upright and probably finish Hayes. I mean, Hayes is another one of these guys. He's 33 years old, but man, in MMA fight years, he's way beyond that. And I think he has taken an accumulation of damage. Even though, again, he's a warrior, he's hard to finish, and he's going to come to fight. I think this stylistically, this is just a tough matchup if Hayes can't get Wen down repeatedly and just work his ground game. And I don't think he's going to be able to do that comfortable. So my pick is going to be Wen. I think that he does probably win this fight. If it hits the scorecards, I think he edges it out. If not, I think he can knock Hayes out, and I think he probably does here. I think Wen is dangerous enough and a good enough capable finisher that, again, stylistically, it might be a tough matchup in a quick night for Hayes. So the pick is Wen, probably by finishing this spot.
Yeah, the way you have to look at this fight is Wen going to knock Hayes out before Hayes repeatedly takes Wen down? And that's honestly the two most likely outcomes here because – you know, Ben Wen, while he does actually have a decent ground game, when he faces elite ground fighters, he gets exposed a little bit. You saw in the Luis Smolka fight, Smolka has a fantastic ground game. That was just a back and forth barn burner, but eventually Wen got overwhelmed on the canvas and he just took a beating, and eventually got finished. And then when Wen took on Formiga, he got repeatedly taken down. He actually, you know, ate some shots on the feet as well. But eventually, you know, he got overwhelmed on the canvas and submitted. So in this fight, Wilson Hayes is not nearly as dangerous on the feet. I mean, he has some respectable stand-up skills, but Wen definitely is the more capable striker. He's a little bit longer. Wen also has more power on the feet and he's more dynamic. So, Wen's opportunity to win this fight is going to be, quickly and to hurt Hayes during those stand-up exchanges. Because if this fight goes to the floor, I just don't see Wen winning those scrambles. I mean, he is capable on the canvas. I mean, you saw it with that really quick, submission victory he has over Tim Elliott. But I think Wilson Hayes is a whole nother level of grappler. And, I don't see Wen, you know, latching onto something and, you know, kind of getting lucky against somebody like Wilson Hayes in terms of grappling. And that's the big concern here. I know Wilson Hayes is, you know, getting a little bit battle worn. He's had 31 career fights. Even though he's only 33, I mean, that is a little old, especially with he's been fighting for 11 years. He is on a 3-fight losing streak, granted against some elite competition, you know, Henry Cejudo and those guys. You can't just completely throw out, that 3-fight win streak or losing streak out the window, but, he has lost against some of the best fighters in the world. Now in this fight though, it really is just going to boil down to how good is, Ben Wen's takedown defense and can he knock out, Wilson Hayes before Wilson Hayes takes him down? And I just don't know if he will because, you know, Ben Wen, while he is a pretty good striker, you know, he's not known for being, you know, a ferocious power puncher. And Wilson Hayes When he is aggressive and looking to get fights to the floor, I mean, he can absolutely shine. I mean, there's a reason that he earned his way to a UFC title shot, and that's because he went to his roots, was taking fights to the ground and dominating people there. You know, he took Dustin Ortiz down. He took Hector Sandoval down. He took Olga Sasaki down. So, I think that, as long as he goes back to his roots here and is shooting for takedowns and trying to keep Wen on the canvas, I think he wins those scrambles. And I'm not convinced that he'll get a submission, but I do think that he'll at least do enough to win a decision. So I'm going to side with the veteran here in Wilson Hayes, and I think that he does put Wen on his back and keep him there. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Alexei Konchenko, who is 19-0, taking on Yushin Okami, who is 35-11. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Konchenko open -320, the comeback on Okami at +240. Right now looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Konchenko -340, the comeback on Okami at +260. So a lot of margins have tightened up a little bit here as well. It's kind of tough because, I mean, Okami obviously at welterweight, a very big welterweight. He's long, he's strong. Most of us know him through the middleweight career that he had, a very successful. He was one of the best middleweights for years and years outside of Anderson Silva. I mean, he was at the top of the food chain there in the middleweight division. He just couldn't get over that hump, of course, but Okami, very tough out. But that being said, it's 2018. This is another fighter that's had a ton of fights. He's 37 years old. So in MMA years, he's way beyond that. He is getting to the point where he's a bit chinny as well. And if he can't control the fight and get the fight to the floor, he can have some problems. And Konchenko in his own right definitely has some solid wrestling. I think he's got some decent takedown defense, and he is by far the more dangerous striker here in this spot. I mean, he's got power on the feet. He likes to take the fight to the floor and work his ground and pound, and he's capable of winning fights by submission. He doesn't really look for that path very much. He'd rather do some damage and knock his opponents out. So I think it's going to be interesting here because obviously there's going to be a size discrepancy. Okami's going to tower over him a little bit, but pure power, Konchenko is going to be just fine in that area, I think. And again, he is going to be by far the more dangerous of the two here in this spot as well. So I think we're going to see Okami looking to close that distance and get Konchenko to the floor, but I think Konchenko is going to end up landing that big bomb and rocking Okami and then finishing the job here as well. So you're seeing a 3.5-1 line. I think it's a solid line for a reason at this point of Okami's career. And I think Konchenko is going to continue. He's got a solid win over Alves in his UFC debut, and he's going to continue that with another solid win over a very respected fighter in Okami here at this point as well. So I think Konchenko does get it done, probably by knockout here over Okami. So the pick is Konchenko.
And I'm with Konchenko as well. I mean, this guy is just a tremendous fighter. You know, he entered the UFC and made a really impressive UFC debut against Thiago Alves in that Russian event in Moscow. And, you know, here he is making another quick turnaround and taking on another former title challenger. So, you know, the UFC is really high on this guy to be throwing him in there against some talented veterans in Alves and Okami. And Okami, I mean, he has a path to victory here. I mean, clearly he is a very big physical fighter. And I mean, he was a pretty good sized middleweight. So, he is a very big, welterweight. He's going to be 4 inches taller than Konchenko. So, I mean, if he can use that size and get a hold of Konchenko, drag him to the ground, then he's got a path to victory. I mean, but if this fight stays standing, if Konchenko can get some distance, create some space, you know, Okami was a little chinny at middleweight. He is going to be extra chinny in this fight. And I think, you know, it's only going to take a couple good shots from Konchenko, and Okami is going to be in big, big trouble. Okami doesn't have kind of that speed and athleticism that he used to have. He's just, in a situation where if he cannot get a hold of Konchenko quickly at the beginning of each round and put him on his back, then I think that he's going to get knocked out. So I think it's only a matter of time, and I think honestly it might happen in the first round. So I'm actually going to pick Alexei Konchenko to put away Okami and continue that march on and move on to 20-0 with another TKO or knockout victory against a savvy veteran in Okami. Now, moving on to the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have a light heavyweight contest between UFC newcomer Jim Crute, who is 8-0, taking on veteran Paul Craig, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Crute opened minus 245, the comeback on Craig at plus 175. Right now it's Crute looking over BetDSI. Crute is actually at minus 260, and the comeback on Craig looking at around plus 200 here. So 260s, 200s across the board. It looks like on Don Best, there's some 220s out there, 240s. So around 2.5 to 1 or so for Crute. I think it's about right. Because, I mean, Craig is definitely a dangerous fighter. You can never count the guy out. I mean, as proven in his last fight, the guy could be losing the entire time and then off his back, you know, catch you with a submission. Craig does have some submission skill. He's a finisher. I mean, obviously 9 out of his 10 victories have come by submission. That's what he's going to look to do. On the feet, he's a little unorthodox, and he does have some wild aggression and some power. So you have to be careful. You can't exactly underestimate him completely on the feet, but that's where Crute's going to have a huge advantage. Crute, he's a very promising prospect, only 22 years old. The guy has some power on the feet. He won, of course, on the Contender Series by a pretty impressive knockout. But I did not really like the defense that I've seen in Crute, especially in the Contender Series fight. And I mean, and if you look back at some of his fights, he does get hit a lot. I mean, so if any negative to his game right off the rip, I should mention, it's Crute's stand-up defense. I mean, he's very hittable, and he's willing to take a shot to land his as well. And I mean, he's got a tough enough chin that he can do that so far. I mean, you know, he's got the youth advantage on his side. He's got that warrior mentality, but he definitely needs to tighten that up against the upper echelon, even at 205. We all know that that's kind of one of the weaker divisions in the UFC, but still, you don't want to have that kind of defensive, you know, flaws when you're going up against some of the higher level fighters. But this is his debut, and stylistically he matches up very good with Craig, because I don't think Craig's going to be able to get him to the floor. And if Craig can't get him to the floor, Craig's going to get knocked out here. Crute is the type of fighter, again, he's aggressive. I mean, everything that he throws is with power and the intent to knock you out. He does have some kicks to go along with it as well. So, I mean, he's a very well-rounded fighter. He does have a submission game. So that's why even if Craig gets him to the ground, I don't think it's going to be easy for Craig to submit him. I think Crute's going to be, you know, obviously his ground awareness is going to be okay there as well. So regardless of where this fight takes place, Crute's going to be game. But I think obviously it fares him better to keep this fight upright and knock Craig out on the feet, because I think that's what's going to happen here. So the pick is Crute. I think he probably dispatches of Craig early, probably round one, maybe into early round two, but he ends up finishing the job. I mean, he just has that killer instinct, and I think he's going to go a long way if they match him properly. And again, he kind of corrects those defensive flaws a little bit more. I mean, all fighters get hit. I mean, there's nothing you can do with this high level. You're going to get clipped. Your defense isn't going to be perfect, but Crute, if you look at some of the footage, you'll see what I'm talking about. He needs to tighten up that D to have a little bit more success and to continue at age 22 to have the longevity and have a successful UFC career. He definitely needs to tighten that up. So outside of that, though, great fight for Crute. I think he does get the knockout win here over Craig.
Yeah, I'm actually a pretty big fan of Crute. He was impressive in that debut on Tuesday Night Contender Series. I mean, this is a guy that puts together combinations. He mixes it to the head and the body with his hands. He has pretty nasty kicks, both to the legs and to the body. I don't know if he can reach all the way up there for a good head kick, but he probably can. You know, this is a guy that has impressive knockout ability with just about every limb. And the fact that he finished his opponent with a left hook is really impressive, because I'm pretty sure he's right-handed. So, I mean, the guy's clearly got power in both hands. Just 22 years old, he's clearly a light heavyweight to keep an eye on. Because, I mean, you look, most of the guys in the light heavyweight division are getting up there in years. So, same thing in heavyweight. So, it's really exciting to have a talented young fighter like this be making his UFC debut. Now, Paul Craig is not somebody you want to sleep on, though. You know, he had an exciting initial UFC run, getting that first victory of really dominant one over Henrique da Silva. Then he kind of got crushed in his next two fights by first round knockout. But in his last fight, I mean, it was just insane. You know, losing a fight to Ankalaev and then forcing a tap on a triangle choke with 1 second left in the third round. I mean, just insane. So, you know, this is a guy that you cannot give even a brief moment of hesitation. You can't let your guard down. because Paul Craig can tap you out. He has a really good ground game. And he has a little bit of power on the feet, as you saw in his UFC debut, although clearly the feet is where he is at his most exposed, and that's where Crute is really going to shine. But, Crute can't just blindly charge forward and leave his chin out, because, Craig could make him pay for that. Also, Crute does have a few submissions to his name, so I mean, he clearly does know what he's doing on the ground, but I just don't want him to go anywhere near the canvas with Paul Craig, because that's Craig's specialty. And if Crute can just keep this fight upright, avoid getting taken down, and just start hammering away, I think Paul Craig, with the fact that he is a little chinny, this is going to be a really good, exciting potential matchup here, where Crute could not just win, but win impressively by first round knockout. So, especially for an Aussie, I think that this is a great, potential debut fight for him. It's just, he just needs to be careful, not get too over aggressive, and leave himself open to counter strikes or, an easy counter takedown. But my pick is going to be Jim Crute to win by knockout. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Suman Mokhtarian, who is 8-0. Taking on Sadiq Youssef, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Youssef open minus 385, the comeback on Mokhtarian at plus 265. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's Youssef minus 570, minus 570, the comeback plus 420 on Mokhtarian. So line markers have tightened up, a little bit more action on Youssef. Mokhtarian, obviously not getting a lot of respect in his UFC debut. Of course, his brother, a UFC veteran that didn't really get a ton of respect either, fighting in their lighter weight classes. So the one thing you got to respect, though, is that obviously mixed martial arts is in the family bloodline. I mean, these guys are definitely brothers training. These guys are pushing each other to get better, and with time and experience, they're definitely going to be able to improve and keep on getting better. And the Mokhtarian actually has showed some very nice capabilities. And now, of course, he's more of a ground fighter than anything else. But if you look at the Ultimate Fighter, he was on Tough 27. He lost by unanimous decision in a very competitive fight, a very close fight. But before that, my issue with Mokhtarian before that is his tough resume. He fought all bums. I mean, he fought very low level competition. So a lot of the victories that he got, were against just extremely low level competition. So it is what it is. But again, he stepped up on the show and he had to fight a live body, and he actually performed relatively well in a very competitive fight. And a lot of that was actually taking place on the feet, and he showed some of his striking skill as well. And the guy's not bad. I mean, he pushes forward. He's aggressive. And again, he doesn't go for the takedowns, and he doesn't really have the wrestling you'd like to see for a more of accomplished ground fighter than anything else. But he is a pretty complete fighter. And he's one of these fighters that really grabs opportunistic subs as well. So if you leave your neck out, he's going to take it fast. I mean, he's going to hop on it and try to submit you and finish you. So, again, Mokhtarian's not bad, but stylistically here, if he can't get the fight to the ground and his wrestling doesn't come through against Youssef, he's going to get picked apart. I mean, Mokhtarian, as the fight progresses, you can tell he gets a little bit slower. He gets a little bit more predictable. And Youssef is the kind of explosive, fast, powerful athlete that has really great striking, solid takedown defense. I mean, he's going to be able to take advantage of Mokhtarian and actually land some punishing blows and probably get him out of there or hurt him, if not just pick him apart to a decision win here. So Youssef is definitely the fighter you want to watch here and keep an eye on. I mean, the guy had a huge win on the Contender Series over a very highly touted prospect in Mike Davis. A lot of people were thinking Mike Davis is the next big thing. Davis has outstanding striking, and Youssef was actually able to outstrike him as well. So the only blemish on Youssef's career, it was kind of a flukish type knockout loss as well. So look back at that, you'll see what I'm talking about. So Youssef actually is a total package in my opinion, and sky's the limit for him, especially in the featherweight division. And it's going to start here getting the W over Mokhtarian. I think he could possibly get a highlight reel type of finish here over Mokhtarian, especially as the fight progresses, but he has to be careful. He has to show Mokhtarian some respect because Mokhtarian is definitely a dangerous fighter. But again, as far as the levels that these guys are at, Mokhtarian is not quite at the level of Youssef right now. Youssef is high chalk for a reason. I think that he does come through, and again, highlight reel type fashion probably more so than not. So Youssef is a guy to keep an eye on, like I said, and he probably gets a finish here over Mokhtarian.
Yeah, Youssef is one of those rare fighters that kind of earned a spot in the UFC by winning a decision on the ultimate or on the Tuesday Night Contender Series, but it was an impressive decision. I mean, he landed some really good strikes. He just completely dominated his opponent and just couldn't quite put him away. So against here against Mokhtarian, the one thing you got to remember is, the Mokhtarian brothers, they really kind of feed on just complete scrubs, to make their way to the UFC. I mean, Mokhtarian does have a dangerous grappling acumen and he's very crafty with his submissions. I mean, you look up, three victories, I think one of them was a twister and the other one, if you look it up, it's just really strange. It's a modified triangle choke. They call it the TP where, he basically folds his legs into a really long triangle, and choked his opponent out in different fashion. I mean, it really looked weird and he somehow chokes his opponent unconscious. But again, he was not facing good competition in those fights, but he still is able to pull off these amazing submissions. So, you can't completely take the ground game for granted with this guy. He was on the Ultimate Fighter, but had to back out due to some knee problems and then, lost a decision, I believe, in his fight on the show. So we really haven't seen a lot out of Mokhtarian, but we do know that his ground game is pretty legit. So basically, if Yusuf can avoid going to the ground here, he should be in good shape. And Mokhtarian really isn't a great wrestler. He doesn't really look to take fights to the floor aggressively. So I think Yusuf will be in pretty good shape overall anyway. Yusuf is a spectacular striker, very technical and precise. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's pretty sound defensively as well. He doesn't rush in. So I think over the course of three rounds, Yusuf is just going to pick Mokhtarian apart on the feet. And I think at some point he'll probably hurt him enough to put him away. So my pick is going to be Sodiq Yusuf to get the win, as long as he doesn't do something silly like, leave his neck completely exposed or, slip and fall and give up his neck or something during a scramble. This is definitely Yusuf's fight to lose. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Jake Matthews, who is 13-3, taking on formerly Tony Martin and now Anthony Rocco Martin, who is 13-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Martin opened -135, Matthews and -105. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually Matthews -130, even money on Martin the other way. So line flipped, and it's going to continue to flip back and forth. This is truly a pick'em type of fight for sure. Both these guys at welterweight have actually, obviously former lightweights that have moved up to welterweight and have had success against high quality competition, high level competition. And ages 24 for Matthews and 28 for Martin, these guys are getting nothing but better and better fight by fight, getting more confident. It's nice to see, because, at times these guys, especially Martin early on in his career, his UFC career, I was disappointed at times because you could see the potential and the skill that the guy had, but at times between fight IQ, between conditioning, he just, he had some flaws in his game and it was frustrating because you saw it. But now since he got all that, he's gotten his personal life set aside. He's got his health on track. Everything's kind of lining up perfect for him. He's got his confidence going. Welterweight seems like to be a great weight class. Some huge wins. His cardio is not an issue anymore. He's really turned things around and he's never fought with more confidence than he is right now. And a lot of the same thing could be said with Matthews as well. So both these guys are well-rounded. They can beat you on the feet. They're getting better on the feet and they're more ground fighters. Both these guys like to take the fight to the floor, out-wrestle their opponents. They have the ability to finish you on the feet as well, but they're not looking to take you to the floor if they don't have to at times either. So they're more than capable of standing up and beating you on the feet. In fact, Martin's jab is starting to be a lot more on point and being a really good weapon and a good tool for him to use. He's throwing it more effectively and he's following up with some decent combinations as well. He's throwing his high kicks, I think, really well to the point where he's confident with those. A big time win over LaFleur in his last fight as well. So a lot of good things you want to see. And of course, Jake Matthews, I mean, he's coming off of a really big win over Anzai as well, an impressive submission win. So these guys are both, again, I think ascending at the right time. And this is a great quality matchup. That's really a head scratcher because I'm going back and forth picking who wins this fight. I mean, Matthews has shown, I think at times a more diverse striking skill set than Martin. And I think he does have a little bit more pure punching power, and his wrestling might be a little bit better at times as well, but we're not going to know until they get in there and match up and, you know, the fight starts playing out exactly who has what edge here. So it is going to be intriguing. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to side with Martin here because I think what I've seen from him lately has impressed me a little bit more than Matthews. And I think he's going to continue to just get better fight by fight, a little bit more so than Matthews again. So I'm going to lean with him, slight edge his way in this spot. But man, it's a tough one to really pick. And in a way, I kind of feel bad that one of these guys has to get their little run at welterweight, come to an end here because, you know, obviously one of these guys got to lose because I'd like to see them how far they each can get if they were matched separately. But again, I like the matchup. I dig it. I think this is going to be one of the best fights on the card. And the winner here takes a huge step forward, and it's going to be a quality win. So without a doubt, I'm looking forward to watching this fight and see how it plays out. But my pick right now is going to be Martin. I think, like I said, I've just been a little bit more impressed with what I've seen with him more so than Matthews, even though Matthews has been very impressive in his own right. So, but for me, the pick is Martin to win.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Jake Matthews and Tony Martin both have actually had very similar career paths where, you know, they came into the UFC as young, talented, aggressive fighters, oversized lightweights that had to cut a lot of weight. With Martin, the big weight cut took a lot out of his conditioning. With Matthews, I thought the big weight cut didn't take out of his conditioning, but it took out of his durability. And then they both have had tremendous success since moving up to the welterweight division. Martin has been able to fight more consistently for longer periods of time. And Matthews has been able to take shots better in the welterweight division. And both have gone undefeated so far, combined 5-0 in their welterweight runs. So I've been very impressed with both of these fighters. Both are very talented. I would say Matthews is the better wrestler of the two. Martin has a little bit more dynamic stand-up ability, really good jab. I would say Martin is a little bit better with submissions, although Matthews is a pretty gifted submission artist. Matthews is the better ground and pound. And Matthews does have a developing stand-up as well. So this is a really evenly matched, high-stakes fight. Both guys are about the same size even too, with Matthews being about 1 inch shorter, giving up about half an inch in reach. So, I mean, I'm really excited for this fight. I think both of these guys are going places for sure. You know, Tony Martin, I was really impressed with that last fight, the knockout against Ryan LaFleur. I mean, that's basically an older version, of Jake Matthews. You know, a wrestler, an athletic wrestler with some submission and striking ability. So if Martin could do that against Matthews, he definitely could do that against LaFleur. He could definitely do it against Matthews. But I will say that, you know, LaFleur retired after that fight. You know, Jake Matthews is still very young and on the rise, you know, at just, I believe, like 24 years old. So, you know, Jake Matthews is somebody that's really exciting. And I think that, at this point in their careers, they're just so evenly matched that maybe the wrestling of Matthews is going to be enough. You know, we have seen Martin get flustered a little bit by really competent grapplers that could overwhelm him a little bit early, get him to the floor. So I think Jake Matthews does take this fight to the canvas. I think he does secure top position, and I think that can be enough to either eventually win the fight by winning rounds, or Matthews might be able to find a finish along the way. But I think, you know, if there's a finish, it's probably Martin by knockout because Matthews has historically had a little bit of durability concerns, even if they have gone away at, moving up to welterweight, you know, that never fully goes away. So, you know, Martin could definitely, crack the chin of Matthews, but I think Matthews does utilize that wrestling, fighting on his home turf, being a native Australian. I think that he's going to be crazy motivated to perform here, and I think he does get the job done. So my pick is going to be Jake Matthews, probably by decision. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Mark Hunt, who is 13-13-1 with one no contest, taking on Justin Willis, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hunt open -155, Willis +115, and right now we're seeing Willis over at BetDSI coming in at -120 to come back on Hunt at -110, so line flipped a little bit. This is intriguing. I mean, like Brian just mentioned, the record for Mark Hunt. I mean, throw that out the window. If this is the first time you're hearing about Mark Hunt or whatnot, most of you guys that are listening to the podcast, obviously that's not the case, but if for those that are newbies and they hear 13-13 record, they're going to think this guy's a total can. I mean, obviously you got to throw the record out the window completely with Mark Hunt because he's way beyond that as far as the overall skill and what he's accomplished throughout his career. And Mark Hunt, obviously, again, I mean, everything's highlighted by his striking ability. The guy has crazy good knockout power. His takedown defense has gotten to the point where he has the ability in most cases to keep the fight upright and knock people out. I mean, the guy is just a devastating striker. Time and time again, we've seen it. So the problem here though is against Willis. Willis is a pretty decent striker in his own right. He's going to be a little bit bigger than Hunt. I mean, obviously Hunt has had to face bigger fighters in the past, so that's nothing new to him, but Willis's skill set is kind of unique. I mean, a lot of times when Hunt's facing these wrestlers that want to take him down, oftentimes these wrestlers don't quite have the stand-up ability that Hunt does, and they don't want to stand and bang with him at all. Well, Willis, I think, does have the boxing to not want to play around with Hunt all that much, because that's Hunt's best path to victory, of course, and Willis knows that as well. But Willis's boxing and his power aren't exactly something to laugh about or take lightly either. So Willis has enough power in the feet. I think he can be competitive at times with Hunt. Not that he wants to go down that blueprint exactly, but Willis is also a wrestler and he has a blueprint to take the fight to the ground possibly and get the win that way as well. So stylistically, this is an intriguing fight because again, if Hunt's able to keep this fight upright, then the advantage definitely swings in his favor because strike for strike, even though at times, especially at age 44, Hunt's chin is actually, I mean, from being really solid and being just a hard guy to knock out, obviously with age, with the fight years that he's, you know, wars that he's been through or whatnot, his chin is definitely suffering a little bit more and it's weaker right now. And Willis has enough power in the heavyweight division, especially that he could get this knockout win on the feet, even though Hunt is the better striker. So you can't really count that out, but and more times than not, obviously Hunt is going to have the advantage on the feet. He is going to be the one that has a better shot at getting the knockout win, over Willis or whatnot. So Willis is going to have to fight smart. He's going to have to respect Hunt's striking, but he's going to have to probably strike to get inside and get the takedown and try to utilize his advantage, which is the biggest advantage in this spot for Willis is probably on the ground. So will it play out that way? We'll see. Can Hunt's takedown defense kind of, you know, sprawl and brawl his way to a victory here? Possibly. So that's why it's a pick-em type of fight. We're not going to know again until these guys go in there and see how this plays out. But I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Willis. For me, I just have a hard time with these guys. I respect them. I mean, these aging veterans that we're seeing at times on these fight cards, a guy like Hunt, 44 years old. I mean, even though he's a special athlete and performing at a high level still at age 44, I mean, you can't beat Father Time. So I'm going to go with the youth here. I'm going to go with Willis. I think that, again, he has more paths to victory here in this fight, and I think he probably utilizes his advantages and gets the fight done. So the pick is Willis, but not a confident pick. It's a tough one to bet against Hunt because, again, if this fight stays standing, Hunt is the better striker, and I can see it going either way. So for now, I'm siding with Willis, but this is going to be my disclaimer. Make sure you check out Staff Picks on MMAOddsBreaker.com for our final selections for Brian and I. At times after weigh-ins, we do maybe on a fence fight, switch a pick here or there. So check those out to be sure. But right now, I'm picking Willis to get the W over Hunt.
Yeah, this fight's going to boil down to a lot of it, takedowns and whether it can get taken to the floor. You know, Justin Willis is a pretty good athlete. He's a very big heavyweight, physical heavyweight. He's going to have a little bit of size on Mark Hunt. And if he can close the distance and drag Hunt to the floor, then he's going to be in pretty good shape. And you have to go back and look historically, Mark Hunt's fights, three of his last four losses. Now I'm counting the Brock Lesnar fight as a loss, even though Lesnar had some steroids or whatever, but in all three of those fights where he ended up losing either by decision or submission or something, he got taken to the floor. So, you know, his takedown defense is not quite as good as it used to be. You know, he had a nice little run there in the, you know, the peak of his career during the middle of his UFC run where, you know, he was avoiding takedowns and he was just standing and training with people and he was just really hurting them. And then now it started to go back the other way. You look at almost all of his losses except the Overeem knee, have been the result of getting taken down and beaten up or taken down and submitted. So, I think that that's probably what's going to happen here. Now, this is a big test for Justin Willis. I mean, this is a kid that, I remember, watching on, like a reality show way back in the day. And, you know, this is a guy that trained with Daniel Cormier and Cain Velasquez and lost his UFC debut, took some time off, came back, and he's really started to impress, but he has not faced hardly anybody yet in his UFC run. I mean, you look, he has victories over James Mulhern, Alan Crowder, and Chase Sherman. You know, those are not exactly cream of the crop heavyweight victories. So to go from those three all the way up to a Mark Hunt, who's a top 15 UFC heavyweight, has fought for the interim belt, has faced the who's who in the UFC heavyweight division. This is a dramatic step up in competition. You know, and Mark Hunt's going to be fighting in his backyard. You know, we've seen Mark Hunt inspired in fights. We've seen him, you know, you look at his performance one of the last times he fought in New Zealand, it was against Derek Lewis, the former title challenger. And Hunt beat the hell out of Derek Lewis, ended up winning by fourth round TKO. So, you know, it definitely is capable of Hunt, pulling this out. I mean, I've heard that he's had a really nice, training camp, that he's in good shape. But granted, he's 44 years old. His chin isn't what it used to be. His athleticism isn't what it used to be. His takedown defense isn't what it used to be. And I don't think his power is quite what it used to be. I mean, I think the older Mark Hunt would have taken out Alexei Oleinik in the first round instead of getting submitted. So, I definitely am concerned there. So this is just a tough fight to get a read on because Willis is stepping up tremendously in competition, but he is big, physical, talented, and capable. And Mark Hunt is definitely on the decline, but, you know, he still might have enough skill here, especially, you know, with what he's capable of, with the power that he can display, the technique on the feet that he has, that he might be able to pull this out. So I'm slightly going to side with Justin Willis, but this is not a guarantee by any stretch of the imagination. This fight is probably very close, and if Willis can't get it to the floor, I don't think that he can stand and trade with Mark Hunt consistently, and he might end up getting beat just like Derek Lewis did in Hunt's last victory. So my pick is Willis, but I am not crazy confident about it, especially with just the dramatic step up in competition level. Now, dropping down to the light heavyweight division, we have another battle of veteran against a young up-and-comer in Mauricio Shogun Hua, who is 25-11, taking on Tyson Pedro, who is 7-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Line open Pedro -210, the comeback on Hua at +160. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's currently -465 for Pedro, the comeback on Hua at +345. Ridiculous. And I'm saying that because, I mean, obviously I'm going to pick Pedro off the rip. Again, another one of these cases that 37 years old, Hua on the decline of his career for sure. I mean, the guy was a warrior, one of the best fighters at light heavyweight that we've seen. I mean, dating back to his Pride days, I mean, the guy's a warrior, a legend, a champion. What more can you say? I think he's actually made himself into a quality fighter. His wrestling's never been better. There's a lot of things that are at the top of his game right now. But I mean, unfortunately for him, his chin, his body, and again, his age is just not keeping up with everything. But Hua is definitely a dangerous fighter still. I mean, he definitely has some power on the feet. He's capable of doing some good things. But again, defensively, he's a little bit slower. He's a little bit easier to catch on the feet right now, and he's a lot more chinny. So that said, though, Pedro is not necessarily the best striker out there. I mean, especially for being more well-known as a ground fighter. I mean, that's where Pedro's best attribute is as well, is getting the fight to the ground and dominating his opponents that way. Now he is having a little bit more success and getting a little bit more confidence on the feet. And he actually had some success early on against OSP in that fight. And you could see the improvements in his striking aim. So that's good to see. And he definitely has enough power on the feet that he could be a problem for a lot of fighters, even if he might not be the most technically skilled striker, you know, in that aspect of things. But again, don't forget who he's training with. I mean, he's training with the likes of Mark Hunt. He's training with Tuivasa. So he's training with guys that like to stand and bang. So he's going to have no choice but to get better, you know, and actually help those guys with, you know, the areas that they need to get better at too as well. So that's actually a match made in heaven, I think, with the little group that they have training together. So Pedro is getting better fight by fight. And I mean, you're seeing him as a solid favorite in this matchup because I think a lot of people believe that Shogun is just a shot fighter. And that said, this is a good time for Pedro to come in here, pick up a solid win, more likely getting the fight to the ground and maybe pounding Hua out or possibly submitting him more so than anything. But I think it's not going to be as easy as everybody thinks. I mean, Shogun does have better takedown defense than most people probably get him credit for. And again, I think offensive wrestling, Shogun's wrestling's gotten to the point where he could take down some fighters as well. Now, not that he's going to want to really play that game on the ground all that much with Pedro. I think Shogun's path to victory is definitely exploiting Pedro's striking defense and trying to knock him out without getting clipped first. So with that said, the line is ridiculous for those reasons. I mean, I think the line should definitely be a lot tighter than what it is now. I get it. I get that this isn't Shogun Rua in the past. I mean, this is 2018 and he's a different version of himself. But that said, Pedro still has a long way to go before we can really consider him a very solid striker. And if he can't get this fight to the floor, it could get interesting here, especially at high chalk like he is now. So as far as a play goes, there is no way you should lay the juice here. I don't care if Pedro goes out there and destroys him in 2 minutes. I still don't think it's worth the play out there at this price. It's too risky for a guy that's kind of still waiting to prove himself, in my opinion, in the UFC. Let's not forget, I mean, Pedro has, you know, only had a few fights thus far in his whole MMA career, let alone in the UFC. So he has a long way to go. He'll get better, and this is a good stepping stone for him. And obviously the UFC matchmakers are making this fight for Pedro to get a quality win here, in my opinion, and he probably does that. So I will pick him, again, over the aging veteran, but I'm not as confident as all you guys that came in laying that chalk. I actually think the opening line around minus 210 was a little bit more of a fair price, maybe a little low, but it was still more fair than what the current price is now. So it's a dog or pass situation. There's no doubt about that. If you guys don't want to, you feel like you're going to waste your money on the dog, then just pass it. But I wouldn't necessarily throw Pedro in a bunch of parlays either at this price. So stay away from it. Watch it. See how it plays out. But my pick is going to be Pedro to get the W here over Shogun.
Yeah, and I have to go with the youth movement here as well, especially after watching that last fight. I mean, it looked like Shogun was moving in quicksand. I mean, he just does not have that same athleticism and explosive power that he used to have. Now, Shogun has surprised us in the past. I mean, he definitely is still capable. He still has power. He's not completely shot, but like Chuck Liddell was this past weekend. I mean, that was just a travesty to watch that fight. And we've seen Shogun rise to the occasion at some times when he's been getting doubted, I remember, I was really surprised that time that he was against James Tahuna. He was expected. I think he was the underdog against James Tahuna and he ended up destroying Tahuna in a minute. We've also seen, Shogun, just completely get embarrassed. And those were the times like against Ovin St. Preux, like against Anthony Smith. And those were other young guys that, just completely dominated him. And while Tyson Pedro, I don't think has the striking credentials to really stand toe to toe with Shogun and destroy him, Pedro does have very good aggressive wrestling. And I think that if he can get Shogun on his back, and I don't think it'll be too difficult with how slow Shogun moves. I don't think his takedown defense is going to be quite as reactive. He's not going to have those same reflexes that he used to have. I think that Pedro can repeatedly put Shogun on his back, and then whether it's ground and pound, I don't think a submission is that likely with Shogun having some pretty solid overall grappling credentials. But I just think that Shogun is just going to be outworked in this fight. He has the power, and Pedro definitely is capable of being hurt on the feet. We've seen it when Pedro fought Khalil Roundtree. And Pedro potentially could get caught with something, like he did, against Ovince St. Preux with that kind of nasty armbar. So it's capable that Shogun could win by finish, but I think the more likely outcome is that Pedro outworks him and potentially TKOs him with ground and pound. So my pick is going to be Tyson Pedro, but I'm totally with Nick with the potential that Pedro has for getting caught, whether on the feet or on the ground. The fact that he's a 5-1 favorite is ridiculous. And Shogun could definitely win this fight. So I'm picking Pedro, but definitely not betting him. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening. We have former champion Junior Dos Santos, who is 19-5, taking on undefeated up-and-comer Tai Tuivasa, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
JDS, Junior Dos Santos, opens minus 135. The comeback on Tuivasa, minus 105. And right now you're seeing Junior Dos Santos actually at minus 150 over at BetDSI. The comeback plus 120 on Tuivasa. So line margins have tightened up. There's been two reactions on this fight. It's been bouncing around a little bit as well. Tough one because we got another spot where you got the young gun coming against the aging savvy vet. I mean, JDS, I hate to say him, that he's a decline fighter, but we all know, again, what kind of wars he's been in. I mean, just the Cain Velasquez fights alone have taken their toll on JDS, not to mention Stipe knocking him out and obviously Overeem fight. And there's just a lot of tough, tough beats that JDS has suffered throughout his career. And he's a warrior, of course. I mean, even look back at the Hunt fight. I mean, he is one of the best heavyweights that I've seen in my lifetime as far as fighting. I mean, as far as going out there and performing at a high level, beautiful striking. I mean, technical, smart, his wrestling, his takedown defense, everything for being a striker has gotten to the point where, I mean, he's got the total package put together. But unfortunately for him, again, those wars have taken a toll. Like I said, his chin is not the same. He's not the same fighter that he once was, even though in his last fight, he showed a bit of, I think, progression in as far as the strike defense goes. I mean, he was able to keep the distance. He was able to not get clipped. I mean, his movement, his footwork, his technical skill was there. And Ivanov is a very dangerous striker, and he wasn't able to close that gap and get that distance control in there to knock JDS out, to catch that chin. So JDS's defense improved like that, and he's going to have to do it again, though, in this fight against Tuivasa. There's no question who the better striker is or who the better mixed martial artist here is. Tuivasa has a tremendous amount of knockout power. The guy is an athlete. I mean, you might not be able to tell by his physique, but the former rugby player, I mean, tough as nails, of course, like I said, training with Hunt, excuse me, and Crew. I mean, the guy's, just a beast. He's a warrior. He's got that knockout power. I mean, it's kind of surprising to, I'm sure, a lot of folks out there that in his last fight against Arlovsky, he wasn't able to get the job done because Arlovsky, of course, has a suspect chin as well. And that was actually a very competitive fight once it hit the scorecards. I mean, it was close. He could have easily lost that fight against Arlovsky. So that's a bit of a head scratcher there. And Tuivasa definitely has to put his foot on the gas and be a little bit more aggressive and clip that chin of JDS if he wants to win his fight. Because, I mean, this is a 5-round main event. And as it progresses, Tuivasa definitely slows down. And we've seen it time and time again. And if he can't get rid of JDS early on in this fight, we know the chances are JDS is, I mean, possibly of him winning this fight increases significantly as it goes in deeper waters, because JDS, his cardio has always been solid. We know that he comes, again, just true professional. So this is a difficult fight, because I think at any time, if Tuivasa is able to close that gap, he's able to land. He's going to probably catch that chin of JDS and knock him out. So I'm tempted to go that way, honestly, because I just don't trust that chin. But again, from what we've seen in his last fight, maybe there's a still a little bit of hope of JDS making a bit of a title run or whatnot. If he could keep that defense up and his chin safe, then definitely he has a skill set to still beat most heavyweights. Of course, we know the heavyweight division in general, the UFC is kind of weak still. I mean, they're still trying to develop high-level talent in this division. So, I mean, that's why you're seeing even Tuivasa, a guy that is more of a tough, rugged brawler, I guess I want to say, than anything else. That's honing his skills, though. He's getting better in that regard, but that's already making it up the ladder this fast. I mean, It's because the weakness of the heavyweight division for sure. So JDS, again, could still put together a run here and he could still beat most of the heavyweights out there if he could protect that chin. So I'm going to pick JDS to win because he's by far the better fighter, but I'm not confident. And I certainly wouldn't lay the chalk. Even if it's only 140, 150 out there, I don't trust his chin enough right now, especially against a knockout artist like Tuivasa. Again, say what you will. He wasn't able to knock out a Chinny Orlovsky. Yes, but that's a different fight. This is a whole new fight. You really can't base things on that either. And I know what I've seen in JDS, like I said, I mean, power punchers against that chin right now, I would not be as confident as most of you, even if JDS is the better fighter. So that said, I'm picking him to win. He is the better fighter. Like I said, it's just hard not to pick him in this spot, but be careful with money here. I would not be confident, and there's a good chance Tuivasa might pull off the upset win here by knockout. So if you're going to bet this fight, maybe bet it by a prop, because I think there is going to be a finish at some point. I think that JDS, again, takes him in deeper waters. He could finish Tuivasa there. If not, Tuivasa is going to probably finish JDS early on in this fight as well. So maybe look at a prop instead. But the pick for me is JDS to get the W here over Tuivasa.
And I'm definitely going to side with Junior Dos Santos. Tuivasa is dangerous. He's powerful. He's aggressive. He moves forward. He does a lot of the right things. It's just, I just don't think that will work against somebody that has the technical boxing skill of Junior Dos Santos. I mean, you saw a very dangerous fighter in Blagoy Ivanov just get completely outworked and dominated over the course of five rounds by Junior Dos Santos in his last fight. So I thought Dos Santos looked great. He has good movement. His conditioning's on point. He has power in his hands. He's athletic. Obviously, Dos Santos isn't the same fighter that he used to be when he was, you know, terrorizing the heavyweight division and running roughshod over everybody. He has shown a little bit of chin issues after those, you know, just complete horrific wars against Cain Velasquez. And including the title loss and the knockouts against Stipe and Overeem. So, you know, Tuivasa has the power to crack Dos Santos and put him out. But when you saw Tuivasa take on a guy that had some good technical veteran experience like Andre Arlovsky, somebody that is a lot chinnier than Dos Santos, and Tuivasa had trouble putting him away. He really couldn't quite land that big shot. He couldn't close that distance properly because Arlovsky, you know, was able to utilize the distance a little bit better. He was able to manage everything. Arlovsky did get outworked in that fight, but he did not, you know, get out-techniqued, and he was able to protect himself. And I think if Dos Santos can avoid that huge shot, especially in a five-round fight, where Tuivasa definitely has shown that he slows down a little bit even after the first round, I think that this is definitely Junior Dos Santos' fight to lose. I mean, Dos Santos is not going to be taken down, I don't think. I don't think Dos Santos is going to be caught in a regular stand-up exchange. The only thing that I'm really worried about is Dos Santos does have that tendency to kind of back towards the fence. And if Tuivasa can really get some good clinch work in, land some dirty boxing or something, that could potentially be an issue. But overall, I mean, this is Junior Dos Santos's fight to lose. A five-round fight is kind of made for him here. I know that it's kind of in Tuivasa's backyard. He's the up-and-coming prospect. He's the athlete, but, Tuivasa has shown some conditioning issues in a five-round fight. I think, as long as Junior Dos Santos doesn't get caught in the first round or two, he's going to be in really good shape. I could see him outpointing Tuivasa over the course of five rounds. And if Tuivasa gets really tired, I can see Dos Santos connecting enough to put him away. So my pick is going to be Junior Dos Santos. I think he gets the job done. And I think that he's potentially going to be on that short list of contenders. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 142. Now, if we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.